Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Straight Talk. My name is Ted Santos, and I am your host. And we are the talk show made for men by men, except ladies, I promise you will never want to miss our show. In the words of the late, great James Brown, this is a man's world, Straight Talk. But it would be nothing without a woman or a girl. So welcome to Straight Talk. As I said, I am your host, and we are the talk show that talks about love, life, relationships, money, wealth, and we always do it from a man's point of view. And tonight will be no different. We are the show that addresses some of the most provocative and untouched conversations. This is where political incorrectness lives, and we talk about things, dismantle them, take them apart, and we always do them in sort of a forum format where we have men and women on the phone at once really talking things through, asking the tough questions, and having conversations that most of us aren't having even in our relationships. Many people listen to this show who are in relationships or married, and after the show find themselves having conversations with their significant other about things that they just didn't know about one another. That is one of the outcomes that we're seeking. That's what makes our topic and our show so rich and valuable. So, before I get into our topic, and it is going to be quite controversial, I'd say it's one of the most important topics in relationships, and it will force us to talk about quite a few things with regard to relationships, and they're going to be very important things. So I look forward to that. One of the things I want to say is that I said before, people are often looking for answers. You know, it so happens today is a topic where it is an answer, and it's pretty amazing what happens when you give people an answer. I always say before you can start talking about answers, or in other words, solutions, people want solutions. Before you can start talking about solutions, you really have to start working on transforming the mindset of people. I mean, if you think about it, back in the 1920s, there was a guy by the name of Robert Goddard. And in the 1920s, he said, one day man will go to the moon. The New York Times wrote an article about Goddard saying that he was really an imbecile, wasn't very intelligent, wasn't as intelligent as a grammar school child, and they ridiculed him for talking about a man going to the moon in the 1920s. In 1969, the New York Times had to write another article to apologize to him. So this is the talk show where we have sometimes those conversations, they sound counter-commonsensical. They don't make sense. At first sight, you may think they're ridiculous and we are wasting our time. And I've had people ridicule me for bringing up some of these topics and saying men don't talk about them or they really don't. Well, for those of you who don't know, we have a Facebook page, and it's also called Straight Talk, and that allows us to do what we do here 24/7. So on our Facebook page, we get to talk about relationships and everything. And almost half, about 45% of the members of the group are women. So if you'd like to join it, connect with me on Facebook, and I'll plug you into the group. Love to have you. The topics are provocative. They're definitely straight talk. And if you don't have a strong stomach for having a really direct and open, honest conversation, it may not be the best place for you. But we do it in a very mature way, just like we do here on a show. And we take phone calls. So the calls are live. The phone number to call in is 323-642-1387. That's 323-642-1387. So I'll be taking the calls in a few minutes before I bring the topic up. But one of the things that I want to address before we get into this is a possible solution for relationships. I mean, if you look at the divorce rate, it's 50% or more than 50%. And some people will argue and say it's dropping. Well, when you look at the gay and lesbian marriage rates, it has diluted the divorce rate, the numbers for divorces amongst heterosexuals. So, and if you look at it, even more interesting, and we've talked about it on the show, is that gay men have about a 20% divorce rate when they're married together, and lesbian women have more than twice that, 45% divorce rate. So men and women who want to be in holy matrimony, well, we may have some things that we don't talk about, and maybe there are expectations that women have, and we're not fully addressing them. So tonight we're going to get into that, you know, and I find it interesting that people say they don't want to play games in relationships. You know, it's almost like, I don't want to play games, except it's okay for me to play games, I just don't want you playing games with me. And we wonder why our relationships fail. We start them off playing games. So today we're going to talk about something that completely eliminates the game. Completely. And I'm asserting, the topic is, here's why arranged marriages are needed now more than ever. You know, there's all kinds of research that shows that men are really dropping out of the marriage. They're dropping out of the whole idea of marriage. And some will rebut that and say, well, women are dropping out also. Well, part of the reason women are dropping out is because they're finding it harder and harder to find a man who earns more than they earn. They're having a hard time finding a suitable mate, which creates a whole other problem, which we really are not, this show isn't designed to address that. But this show is about arranged marriages and how it can eliminate the divorce rate. So people often go into marriages with a, let's see what will happen. They don't really have a good commitment or intention for why they're together. They have feelings, and feelings come and go. If things are going exactly the way you want, it's easy to feel good. You know, once there's a quote somewhere that says, I'm sailing in storms, because anyone can sail a ship in good weather. It's knowing how to sail a ship in a storm that teaches you how to be a sailor. So when marriage doesn't go the way you want, what do people do? And currently, somewhere between 70 and 80% of divorces initiated by women. You know, are we really looking at that? Are we really looking at what makes a man and woman compatible for marriage? So I gave this solution as arranged marriage, and I put that on Facebook, and it's interesting to find that a lot of men could see the logic behind why you would do that and how that would stabilize households and change the culture, at least here in the U.S. And interesting to see that a lot of women, and there were some men too, but a lot of women thought this was horrible, oppressive, violating women's rights, almost as if the women were being sold off somewhere, like their parents had a debt. So this is, people ask for solutions, and I gave them one. And when you give people solutions, it's interesting how they can find so many reasons for why it cannot be done. And I'm going to say, you know, when you look at the work that's done on human behavior, when people spend more time trying to figure out why something can't work, those are limiting beliefs, and it's, you could say, normal. It's automatic. It's part of our human paradigm. And that's one of the things that we're going to be dealing with on this call, with this topic, is people are going to have a preconceived notion for why it can't work, and they're going to pull up all the historical profiles of women being married into slavery, and they're going to have all those conversations instead of dealing with arranged marriage right here in the U.S. And if anyone thinks arranged marriage has never happened in this country, you really need to think about that. Because this whole idea of choosing your own mate is a fairly recent phenomenon. It's not what people have been doing throughout the whole idea of marriage, matrimony. There was a guy about, his name is John Keats. And John Keats wrote a book in 1812. And I just want to make sure I have the name of his book correct. John Keats wrote a book in 1819, and it was called La Belle Dame sans Merci. My French is not good, so La Belle Dame sans Merci by John Keats. And it was one of the first novels, love stories, written. And book written in 1819, people read it. By the 1850s, the book became hot. And it really started to shape culture in the U.S. And people went from these arranged or semi-arranged marriages to wanting this, what people consider to be this romantic, beautiful love affair that was written about by John Keats in his book. So this book was, you know, back then in 1850s. A book was a movie, Hollywood. That's how you would receive entertainment, aside from live plays. So this book shaped the culture of marriage, and it changed it from marriage being this legal binding contract that was designed to drive generational wealth to this love and gifts and romance and just having fun and excitement. And it went to that, to where we are today. And if you look back, divorce rates were much lower. People had a very different purpose and intent. Lots of empires or generational wealth was built through marriage. It's part of the reason why it was turned into a legal binding contract. It was the way to preserve generational wealth and pass it down to your offspring. Now here we are just looking for feelings. And that has set up something that no one wants to talk about. It's almost turning us into drug addicts. And I want to address that. Before I go down that path, I want to hear from the callers. What do you all think of arranged marriages being a solution to eliminate or significantly reduce divorce? I'm going to take my first call from area code 415. 415, you're live and on the air with Straight Talk. 415, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Ted, is that me?
Yes, that's you. 415, what's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Alex, calling from San Francisco, California. And, Ted, I'm digging the topic so far. One thing I wanted to mention is we probably want to clarify if we're talking about forced arranged marriage or, you know, a voluntary arranged marriage, right? So who is doing the arranging? Is it the government doing the arranging? Is it your parents doing the arranging? Is it your friend or the yenta doing the arranging?
Yep.
So let's talk about that. Yeah.
Yep. So I would, the way I would see it working most effectively is you don't only want your parents, you actually want your grandparents involved in this. I mean, there are some cultures, even today, it's more than just your parents and grandparents. You have aunts and uncles who are involved in this. But if we just strictly looked at your parents and your grandparents, it's safe to say your parents and your grandparents have gotten to know you quite well over your life. If you're, and we're talking about adults having arranged marriage. Traditionally, arranged marriages have a much lower divorce rate. And the idea of force, I'm not even sure how that comes into the picture. I mean, I haven't written about force, and I haven't even thought about that. This is not about selling someone into slavery because, you know, your parents are in, let's say, Thailand, and your father couldn't pay off his gambling debt, so he sells all, you know, he gives his 10-year-old daughter, who's now sold into prostitution. We're not talking about that. This is the United States. So, arranged marriages. I mean, currently, we have a significantly high divorce rate. So, people are proving that they haven't been able to make this transition from traditionally arranged or heavily influenced marriage, influenced by parents, to just strictly picking on your own. So your parents and your grandparents basically are shopping for a spouse from the time you're very young. They're looking at families, they're looking at the individual's behavior, how they were raised, the values, what the company, what they're worth, their assets, what you're combining, what your future will be like. And if you think about it, what's the point of having children if the only reason you have children is because you need someone to take care of you when you get old? So, you know, this really brings up how well are people preparing their children to have a happy, productive, and fulfilled life, which includes marriage and creating offspring and creating generations of success and wealth. So I'm talking about your parents and your grandparents. Does that answer your question?
I think it does. I was just going to add that I think if you assume that marriage is a very strong net positive for society, then the only question is how do you get happy marriages that last, right? So, yeah, I agree that I think it was you didn't consider that there's, arranged marriages had all sorts of varieties in history. Some of them were forced by, the elders in a community or village, and some were, arranged by grandparents or a family friend, and they were, they are arranged. It's sort of like a suggestion, a little bit of pressure, social pressure, but certainly not completely forced. And you also have in Muslim societies from the Middle East to Africa that they had arranged marriages where it's pretty much forced, right? So I think a lot of people will balk at the idea of like a forced arranged marriage. That's too much, that's no good for the person who doesn't want to marry the other person at all, right? That sucks. But if it's arranged and it's like, this would be a really good idea, we'll help you out, we'll help with a wedding, we'll get you a house, we'll give you a small sum of money to get started, blah blah blah, all that stuff. That helps a lot for a lot of people. It helps them narrow down, find a partner and all the hard work that comes into transitioning into marriage, right? So I think you did a good job of clarifying that it's a voluntary system, a community that helps people find other partners that are suitable and get things going, So yeah, that's what I wanted to add. But there's definitely a big difference between the forced arranged marriages that even occur to this day in various countries, especially in Muslim societies, and arranged marriages that are maybe a new form of them, a 21st century arranged marriage, which we'll talk about as this call continues, And that's all.
Well, I'm only talking about in the U.S., and I understand there are lots of things that happen in the rest of the world, right? But we're going to just talk about in the U.S. Right now, I just think about it. It's 50%. Even if the number was 20%, imagine if there's a brand of automobiles. And 20% of the cars that are made, they fail. Like, they guarantee to fail. And if the number was 50% of that particular brand, if it was brand zero, right? The car is called, the automobile manufacturer is called zero. And 50% of the time you buy our cars, it will work. And the other 50%, well, at some point it's just going to break down. I don't know if it's year one or year seven. How many people would buy that car?
I was
How
on
many
mute, but
people?
yeah, not very many. You'd want to have a pretty good guarantee or confidence that it's going to work out,
Right.
It's an
So,
investment.
but the institution of marriage is working that way, and the more the number increases, the more people who are not interested in it. And just like people wouldn't be interested in a car knowing that they had a 50-50 chance that it's just going to break. It's going to fail.
Yeah, I mean, marriage itself has a stock value, right? It's marriage is an institution, quote unquote. It's very complex, and it's sort of the institution of marriage. You know, I suppose has seen its stock decrease over the last 30 years, 40 years. Meaning, if your social status, if you're married versus if you were single 50 years ago, is astronomically different, right? Single people were viewed as defective, and married people were whole and complete or whatever. Nowadays, if you're single, it's not as bad, supposedly. You know, single people aren't as stigmatized. And, you know, in parallel, marriage as an institution has seen itself, the value of it is decreased for better or for worse, probably for worse. But that's just the way it is. So, like you were saying, maybe we're underestimating the value of marriage, and we got the stock price should probably go up again, you know?
Well, maybe it's our approach. That's why I mentioned that book by John Keats in 1819, and it changed the paradigm for how people pursued relationships. So went from, I mean, the idea of marriage itself as an institution was one way to preserve generational wealth and ensure that it was passed down to your offspring. People take it lightly. They do take it like, well, let's see what's going to happen, except it's a legal binding contract. It's a partnership between two people. Whether you have children or not, it's irrelevant. But it still is a legal binding contract. And, you know, if you were going into business with someone, you wouldn't go into business because you feel really good about them. There are certain things that you would need from that person to be a business partner. Complementary relationships that would make them valuable. You know, whether you are finance and they are sales and operations, there's some complementary relationship that you're looking to make it work. And so what I'm getting at is, I think a lot of people are not prepared to know what complementary relationships to find in a mate, so they're left strictly at the mercy of feelings. And when the feelings are not there, it's almost like it's turning us into dopamine junkies. So if you do all these wonderful things for me, I'm going to feel good. I get a dopamine rush. And if you stop doing them, I no longer want to be in this, and I have to go find the next dopamine rush. Or it may foster an environment for infidelity because my spouse, whether it's a husband or wife, is no longer giving me a dopamine rush. But I don't want to leave the comforts of home, so I'll go out and cheat, and I'll get a dopamine rush. From there, it's really turning people – I know this is harsh – it's no different than being an alcoholic, a crackhead, or a heroin addict. And if that's what's driving relationships, that's, you know, it's kind of hard to see where it's going. And I would think having an arranged marriage eliminates that need for a dopamine rush, because now you have other factors involved, and you have your parents, your grandparents, who have been seeking or have found someone who is suitable based on compatibility, family values, money management, assets, all the things that would be important to keep people compatible, whether the relationship is in an up mode or a down mode.
Yeah, I think if I can add something, I would say marriage is today seen as sort of like a luxury good. It's not a necessity, and this is probably not the right attitude for people to have, but I think it's the way people look at it now, is that marriage is seen as a luxury for people with money, with stable lives, and unfortunately, I mean, the reality is marriage has always been about economics and kids, right? So, you know, you get married so that you can have a family and you can afford it. It's always been like that. It'll probably always be for those reasons. People don't really get married for love per se. They get married to find a compatible partner for themselves. The love comes and goes. It changes, but you're always going to have for the reasons of money and creating a home for kids to grow up in. That's why. So we've seen society change over the last 40 years where fewer people are having kids. Fewer people are doing family planning at all in their 20s, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think people are starting to bounce back. The pendulum is swinging back in the other direction where people realize that this whole single thing that's going on to their 30s and sometimes into your 40s is maybe not worth it. It's over, it was overrated, and family and stuff like that is where it's at. And so then they realize, well, in order to do that, I need a partner, right? So how do I get that partner? So arranged marriage is one solution to getting that partner, right? So you got to have a partner if you want to be able to save money at all and have a good, for your kids to be raised right and to have a happy childhood. You're going to need usually to be have two people around. So how do we get there? And so arranged marriage is interesting. I think a lot of people can think about it, especially men, because I think men, maybe especially in their 20s, are more interested in having a partner for whatever reason. And I think because women tend to have more friendships, and this is just conjecture on my part, but I've always thought this, is that women tend to have more friends in their teens and 20s. Men are slightly, the average man in his teens, upper teens and 20s is probably more solitary. So for him, a partner would be more useful. For a woman, she's got friends, she's still more social in her 20s. So a full-time partner is not exactly what she's looking for. So arranged marriage and arranged partners even is something that men are more interested in, especially in their 20s. So, and I can certainly see why people wouldn't want to have a partner forced on them, especially if they don't like them at all. But in your 30s and 40s or whatever, arranged marriage could be a good escape hatch for people that struggle to find the right partner and just want to settle down and get things going, So it's just a matter of, arranged marriage can work. It's worked statistically in the past in certain cases. It's a cultural thing, right? So how do we foster a culture where arranged marriage is seen as successful? Like, it's the same. You can make a parallel to dating, online dating, right? Online dating at first is like, ugh, you have to resort to the internet to find someone. That's kind of pathetic.
Exactly.
And sad. Who would do that?
Right.
And so arranged marriage has to become culturally accessible, not necessarily cool. It doesn't have to be cool. It just has to be socially acceptable so that if you did that, your social status doesn't drop through the floor, So, we have to get to a point where culturally arranged marriage is something that's a feasible option. It's on the table. You can go that route if you want. It's perfectly fine. Right now in the United States, we see it, I grew up here. My parents were born here. My grandparents were born here. So for the average American, arranged marriage is something that other countries do, other cultures do. It's seen as sort of backward now, and I think that can change. It's possible.
Perfect. Well said. Hold that thought. I want to see if we can bring someone else in. Before I bring in the next caller, the number is 323-642-1387. That's 323-642-1387. And next caller I bring in is from area code 919-919. You're live and on the air with Straight Talk. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yo, what's up, Ted? This is Seven Smalls, man. I thought I'd drop in impromptu.
Hey, man.
And
how you doing?
What's going on, guys?
Where are you calling from? Where are you calling from again?
Yes, I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay, cool. Perfect. Go ahead. What are your thoughts on this
topic? So I think in theory, the idea of arranged marriages is actually something that's plausible and something that could be implemented, with the proper safeguards. However, we live in a very gynocentric society where men don't see the benefits of marriage due to the current penal system that actually excoriate men based on the so-called contract of marriage. So from a business perspective, it doesn't make any sense fiscally. However, I think that concept would be beneficial if we got back to more patriarchal norms where men had the animus and had the power to more or less, erect the kind of laws that could benefit them. But at this current social malaise that we see now, I don't see the benefit of marriage for most men. However, I think the concept or the theory of arranged marriage could be good if we tore down some of the current matriarchal, more or less foundations that have been currently built in America as of today.
I can see that being a problem. And before I say anything, Alex, do you have any thoughts about what he just said about the laws revolving around
marriage? While he was talking, a thought occurred to me. Right now we have marriages where it's really up to the two people. Well, here's one thing. I think if we step back for a moment, today most people don't want to interfere and pressure the two people involved, right? And nowadays we have this culture where everything is tolerated, anything goes. If two people want to do something, we're too afraid of exerting our opinion, our influence on those two people. So with that in mind, what happens is we leave the contract of marriage up to the two people, the vows. They write their own vows. They have their own arrangement. And too often, especially in the last 40 years, we've seen men get the raw deal a little bit when it comes to the contract, right? So it's possible, in short, for arranged marriage to have sort of a more of a standard contract where both partners kind of have a good deal. So arranged marriage as a cultural phenomenon could bring about more of an objective arrangement compared to what we have now, which is completely not off the cuff, but everyone has their own thing, and so nobody knows what to do because no one's setting the standard, no one's being a leader in terms of, setting an example of what a marriage should look like. Every contract is different, and usually if that happens, the woman has a better deal than the guy, maybe, So, but I think that kind of adds to what he was saying.
Okay. So, marriage is a legal binding contract, which has it be not any different from any business relationship. Right? So if two companies are going to merge, there are all sorts of attorneys and due diligence. You send out a due diligence team to check out the operations and the finances to make sure they're really performing the way they say they are, and you're going to check out the culture, and do you have all the people you say? I mean, there are a lot of things you're going to check out. And then there's going to be a legal binding contract that unifies these two companies, especially if we're talking in the sense of a merger instead of just an out acquisition where you just buy them and they're absorbed into the company. But when it's an acquisition, there's you're also looking at the symbiotic relationship between the two. If Coca-Cola, and I'm going back in time, if they were merging with a company that creates bottles, a glass company, so, this is a perfect merger between two companies. We make a drink and you make the bottles. We come together as one company. Doesn't matter what the name is, but that's what we are, and we're going to make sure that we are getting in bed with someone who is actually who they say they are. And you send a team out to do that. Well, the way I'm envisioning this is your parents and your grandparents would be doing that due diligence, and they've probably been doing this for a while. So they're not just looking at the person you would marry, your potential mate, or they may be looking at several, right, and choosing the best of three. But they're also looking at the family to ensure the family is actually fostering the kind of values and the things that they've done with their child to make sure this is actually a symbiotic relationship. And what that does is that puts, and I hate to use this word, I'll use it for lack of better words, but it puts some pressure on both people that this is an actual merger of two families. And there's a level of respect and serious effort that's gone in to bring these two parties together to join in matrimony. And maybe one family has a business and the other one has a different kind of business that could work together. You know, a dry cleaning company with marrying someone who makes cleaning products that could be sold or utilized in a dry cleaning company, or they make equipment for dry cleaning. There's sort of a vision in a relationship that's bigger than the couple itself. And oftentimes that will deter the married couple from jumping into the normal, what we call exploitative divorce. So I'm looking at having more involvement from your parents and your grandparents that kind of neutralize that, the fear of an ugly divorce where the guy feels exploited. There's more at stake. And in our current environment, there's nothing at stake. And actually, as you were saying, Smalls, that the man is on the most vulnerable end, and they're opting out because of that.
How you doing? I came to pick up Zion.
Okay.
Right.
Hey.
So what are your thoughts that having your parents and grandparents can help mitigate some of those problems?
Are you talking to me, Ted, or are you talking to Alex?
Both of you. Both of you. No, both of you.
Yeah, well, I can weigh in on that whenever. I mean, I would say to be straight, I would say a lot of people, especially in a more globalized world now, you know, I come from, I guess, more of an upper middle class perspective, and it's definitely the case. A lot of people are moving from West Coast to East Coast, moving from San Francisco to New York or D.C. or vice versa. You know, my grandparents live between either Seattle or Connecticut, and so a lot of our families are all over the place. And our grandparents, you know, we didn't grow up in the same
state,
even the same state. Right. Yeah. So,
right.
So that's tricky. But I do think that there is a little bit of a backlash to the globalization thing. People are seeing the benefits of intergenerational, you know, growing up with your grandparents and things like that. And so I would have no problem if one of my aunts or uncles or my grandparents said, hey, we have a family friend or whatever. That it's happened a lot in my life where people have said, you might like this person. And I think that's, I really appreciate that when it happens. And so I think it's mostly about, it's a cultural thing. How do we develop that culture where it's okay for you to recommend a potential partner to somebody? I think today people were very confused by everything in terms of sexuality has been confused. I think we most of us agree, partly on purpose, right? So we've seen, because of LGBTQ stuff, people don't even know, like, what someone's not even this is their sexual preference, but their gender is. So, like, people are even afraid to be like, you might like this person, because, first of all, it's like people will be offended, like, hey, that's not even my type of person, you know, like, do you even know me, right? That's the first thing that I think people would be afraid of. They think that if you recommend this person, you know, say Mary to Joe will be like, why would you recommend Mary to me? Because Mary's not my type at all. You don't know me, right? And so that would be
right.
The first thing
right.
Where people are afraid. And so that there's stigma there and there's hesitation there. That's, I think, the first place to focus. All this gender crap, all this sexual identity and the you know, like, sexual preference, all that stuff is very confusing. We don't need to go there. But I think the idea that people are afraid to recommend somebody to someone else is there. Everyone's afraid of that. They're afraid that someone is going to, like, they're going to lose face because they recommend someone who's a bad fit for someone else. And the other person is going to think, like, you know what I mean? I already said it, but that's where I think a lot of that hesitation is.
Well, Seven, before you say anything. So see, what you're talking about is, I'm just going to hand off and make a recommendation. When I think of an arranged marriage, I think of it in the way I described a merger between two companies. There's some due diligence that happens, and the person may not be qualified. I mean, when you really sit down and do the due diligence, you may you may find that this really won't work after really exploring the family. And you give reasons why, you know, it wouldn't work. So as opposed to making an introduction and saying, I really think you'll like this person, you're really going to dig into the family. I'm suggesting being much more proactive than just making an introduction.
I see.
So there's some validity to what you're saying, because one of the psychological things is if you introduce me to something, it's almost like I'm admitting defeat, like I couldn't meet someone on my own, so I reject you introducing me to someone. And that is exactly how online dating was first viewed, but now it's just really hot. Now it's being exploited in a way, you know, it's a pickup. It's like a meat market, and people do get married on online dating, except it's just a great place to meet and hook up. And I'm going to go back to what I said before, whether it's Facebook or any online dating, people are getting dopamine highs off of how many likes and hearts they get. And it's like they're almost validating their existence by having someone constantly invalidate them. You know, dating itself, you know, you take me on exciting dates and I have to feel good. You have to make me feel good. And I go on social media for online dating, and everyone wants me, and I feel really good. Except the huge missing is who's preparing these people to be in fulfilling relationships, like functional relationships. So I'm asserting that there needs to be, if you don't just put your children out there to go find someone on their own, your parents and grandparents, and even if your parents live somewhere else, or your grandparents live somewhere else, you want them involved in this. It's an interviewing process. It's literally due diligence, like two companies coming together. What do you think of that, Small?
Yeah, so once again, I think the social I think what you're saying is definitely, in theory, is excellent, you know. However, based on what Alex said, I think there are a lot of social controls that more or less prohibit the materialization of that said marriage. Now, it depends on what stage of your development that you're in. If you're in your stage of development when you're older, say you're, you know, 35 and, you know, you're well-traveled, you got money, you know, you want to get a wife from another foreign country or something like that, I think it's definitely feasible. However, even with that feasibility, I think the marriage should be non-state sanctioned, meaning the state, you know, that man and that woman can sign a binding contract, and under the auspices that, you know, she doesn't get anything, where, you know, that man does a careful inspection of that woman, because that's what I did when I got there. You know.
Hey, you're breaking up, Small.
The marriage I'm sorry, go ahead.
You're breaking up.
You hear me? Right,
yeah,
right.
Not everything. Say it again.
Right. So I was saying that I think it's feasible if a man has, depending on the stages of that person's development, and that the social controls are not as restrictive as they are here in America, and if that man finds a woman that, you know, that he deems to be an excellent partner, and, you know, whether he get her in America or overseas, she understands that it's his program after he's carefully examined the family, and, you know, and more or less, you know, they agree to a non-state binding marriage where, you know, if the man has wealth and status or for whatever reason, you come with nothing, you leave with nothing. So I think in that context of a non-traditional, non-state sanctioned marriage, no doubt, I think it's definitely possible. But once again, you know, it just depends on how the law sees that so-called marriage. So in theory, I think it's an awesome idea, but, you know, we live in such a broken, fractured society, especially with, as I said earlier, with matriarchy. I've always thought about marriage being something that fathers are more or less involved in, and we have such a strong matriarchy. You know, the mechanisms, I don't know, will actually, you know, work out for the benefit of that man. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, I assume Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I was going to say, I probably agree with Smalls, right? I agree with Smalls. I would say one thing that we haven't touched on that's related to what he said was that, I mean, it used to be that arranged marriage was a deal between two families, right? It wasn't a deal between two people. It was a deal between two families. So they would exchange one person for a dowry or whatever. And the dowry wasn't always from the man's family to the woman's family. Sometimes it was the other way around. So it wasn't necessarily gender specific. It depended completely on the culture. And so it was, and nowadays it's just a deal between two people. It's no longer, as of today, it can change, but right now the social pressure, for example, if somebody owes somebody an alimony or whatever, it's only up to the man. The man is only on the hook for that money. It's not his entire family, and it's probably not his kids in terms of debt, if he's got debt there. Depends on the debts. The government considers student debt to be passed down to your kids or something like that. It's very complicated. We don't have to go there. But anyway, it used to be that the family was kind of on a hook to fulfill the deal, whether it was monetary or whatever. Nowadays, it's just two people. And so if we change it back to the way it used to be a tiny bit, where the whole family, I think Asian cultures are more like that. If you watch the movie Crazy Rich Asians, which is the first half of the movie, the first half of the movie is very horrible. The second half of the movie is pretty good. It's really weird. Most movies are the other way around. Most movies, the first half is good, the second half sucks. This movie is very interesting. Their first half is total garbage. If you finish it to the two-hour mark, you'll be like, this movie is pretty good. It does highlight how Asian families are pretty good. I think they have a good balance where they still view marriage as important, and that's the first step, is to realize that marriage is something that's very important. And then they do this whole thing where the family status depends on the status of the person that your family member married, right? And so it's very status-oriented. They really they claw their way to the top, right, in terms of trying to marry up. And it's very competitive, blah, blah, blah. And so the whole family status rests on – if you fuck up, your whole family cares because their social status is tied to how their family members act. And in America, we have a very independent, individualistic culture where if I fuck up, my parents, it won't really reflect on my family members, right? It has to do with our very individualistic culture, which has its benefits and it has its drawbacks. But that's why Asian culture has sort of succeeded in this respect, because their whole family, it's about social pressure and it's about peer pressure, so that, you know, you are supposed to act right in your marriage. You're not supposed to mess around outside your marriage. You're supposed to take care of your kids, save money, not squander money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because your family will kick you out of the family if you don't. They won't talk to you again, or you'll be the black sheep. So that's how Asian culture is. So if you haven't seen the movie Crazy Rich Asians, it's good entertainment value, but it'll start to touch on this, I think. And it's because the deal is from family to family, not from just person to person, I think. So...
Well, that's a big part of what I'm getting at. You know, it's interesting. I know a woman from Singapore, and I was telling her I saw it, and she said, I didn't really like the movie. It was too cliche, and it's indicative of Asian parents always trying to tell their children what to do. And I think that may be, from a cultural perspective, that may be one of the biggest hurdles. Especially from a woman's point of view, that arranged marriages are my parents telling me what to do and who to marry. And there can be resistance there. That's why I think it's good to have more than one choice that you're looking at. But I just for a second want to address culturally, we've indoctrinated women with the belief that when you marry a man, he consumes your life. He takes over it. You take his last name. He's going to have you barefoot and pregnant, and, bedroom and kitchen. And he's going to influence and change who you are. And it has women go into a marriage. I mean, just think, you go in with that mindset almost in an antagonistic way, like a very protective way as a woman. And it's almost like the marriage is doomed to fail because you're fighting against being dominated by someone you're in a union with, literally a contract. So I think that's a big problem. And then when you talk about arranged marriage, that just exacerbates the situation where the woman feels like she's being completely dominated and pressured to do something as opposed to having her own choice. What I think is funny about that is that if a woman has a good friend, female friend, and they're close and they influence one another's life and they change one another, it's not seen as dominating. The same kind of relationship with a man can be easily construed as being forced and dominated. So I think there are so many preconceived notions around the whole institution of marriage that one of you, I think it was you, Alex, saying that men may be more open to a partnership, and I think women may have a somewhat, in some cases, very much preconceived notion about marriage being this dominating force that's going to change and restrict your life. And men, we kind of have the freedom of not having that preconceived notion. I think that gets in the way a lot. And so as a result, you have a lot of women who are not fully prepared for marriage. They're going into it with these preconceived notions, and it's almost like they're drowning and trying to escape something that technically isn't even happening. Because if you're married to a guy who isn't influencing your life in some way, why are you with him? Any thoughts on that?
Well,
small or Alex?
Go ahead.
Great. Alex, you were going to say?
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say that poses a challenge for the arranged marriage, because I think most people would look at an arranged marriage as even more risky in that respect. You know, if you're pressured to marry somebody, then, you know, that person could be the wrong person, and they could, you know, totally try to change you to their mood. Because they're so different and incompatible, they try to force you to fit their mood, you know. So that definitely poses a challenge for the concept of an arranged marriage. But, you know, that's, I think, the major hurdle is, you know, you got to make marriage cool again, especially for younger people. And how do you do that? How do you raise that stock value? And how do you, you know, you have to have incentives for both parties to want to engage. And part of that can be peer pressure. You know, your family will accept you more if you go through the traditions or whatever. Go through what's expected of you. And it's like a cultural, uh-huh. It's a cultural thing, I think. Yeah.
Well, what if marriage becomes an arranged marriage is all about reducing the risk of divorce and ensuring there is a compatible match? It seems people have completely lost the ability to understand compatibility. And when you combine this belief that's coming usually from women that I'm going to be dominated by this guy, and men have their own version of a ball and chain that you've heard, you know, I'm going to be restricted also. But people are afraid of divorce. Have you guys, either of you guys, heard of the book called Quantum Success by Sandra Ann Taylor?
I haven't heard of it.
No, I've never heard of it. I've never heard of it.
So I'm just going to talk to you about one point in the story. So the woman who wrote the book, she's married, and at this time she has two children. And I think one child was 8 and the other one was 6. They were young children. And one evening, Sandra and her husband get into this huge argument. And Sandra, the author, she said she left the house so she could go cool down. and she went for a drive. And when she came home, her children were in their bedroom, and she said they were crying. She said they were bawling so hard, and she couldn't understand why. And so she goes into the bedroom, and she asks, you know, why are you crying? And they said, we don't want, the children say, we don't want you and Daddy to get a divorce. And she says, well, you know, we're not getting a divorce. Why would that happen? We just had a fight. And the children said, no, we know how divorce goes. Many of our schoolmates, their parents are divorced, and this is the pattern. These big fights, a parent leaves the house, and that is sort of the catalyst, the next stages. That's just setting up divorce. So her point was that people think that just getting a divorce is between the husband and wife, and it really isn't. It devastates the children, and it psychologically makes the children terrified of marriage. It scares them, and it does hurt both sides of the family. Even though we're including all these people indirectly, and we ask them to come to our wedding, we exclude them in the process of I don't want to say courting, but we exclude them in the whole idea of making sure the person is qualified. And Alex, you were saying it, you know, I'm on my own. I can, you know, we have this whole lone wolf. I'll do it on my own. Except each marriage and each additional divorce is scaring the hell out of the rest of the country and leaving people with an imprint of what you're saying, Smalls, is that I'm going to get screwed in this. So why even bother? You know, the more divorce, the more people think divorce is possible. And we have no way of putting the brakes on it. So I'm looking at arranged marriage as a way to put the brakes on it. And just as online dating was seen as sort of a helpless way to find a date, arranged marriage may be viewed as I'm helpless. Except it's really to mitigate divorce and ensure a successful, compatible, and fulfilling relationship. So, the book I brought up is because each incremental divorce affects everyone. And it's devastating children who, when they grow up, hell, why would I want to be married and go through what I saw my parents go through?
Yeah, so I think what you're saying is maybe arranged marriage will lead to marriages that are more successful, like less divorce, lower divorce rate, and maybe that's true. I don't know what the statistics are, but the mechanics of how you actually arrange a marriage, that's kind of details, and that can vary. But will an arranged marriage lead to happier marriages that last longer, better for kids? You know, is that true or false? I don't know.
They have a lower divorce rate. And most arranged marriages are not like some child sold into slavery or forced. India is changing. Bollywood is changing India a lot. So Bollywood is now incorporating the romance of Hollywood, like that book I mentioned earlier by John Keats. It's changing it very much to romance and you know, marriage for us is very materialistic. We've taken the dowry overboard.
What do you mean by that? Taking the dowry overboard?
Well, yep. So, you know, diamond rings were not part of marriage at one point. Actually, the reason a man would put a diamond ring on his woman's finger goes back to ancient Greece. And the diamond was precious stones were seen by the Greeks as having spiritual powers. And the diamond being the hardest and the strongest stone was seen as a precious stone with spiritual protective powers. So when the man, let's say, was going off to war, he would put a diamond ring on his woman's finger, her left finger, as a way of spiritually protecting her while he's away. So that almost like through his presence, his spirit would be, you know, in that diamond, and it was a way to ensure his wife was being protected. And that was the reason for putting a ring on his finger. It had nothing to do with marriage and materialism or anything. It had a complete, what you would call, spiritual reason behind it. So in the 1920s, De Beers created a marketing campaign of diamonds are a girl's best friend. Now all of a sudden, diamonds are mandatory. And before the 1920s, diamonds were, I guess, almost like automobiles. Only rich people, a small percentage of the population, would have diamond rings. But now it's become mandatory. Even dating, you know, where are you going to take me on a date? With the restaurant, you know, was it up to the standards? What other things are we going to do? You don't buy me gifts. You know, there are women who feel like, well, until we have strong love, what gifts will you buy me? So it's almost like building a relationship, a partnership, has become subservient. And that's the wrong word, but what's the better word? It's become second to actually building a relationship. And everything is, and and you all may think I'm exaggerating, but what's going to give me that sort of rush of dopamine and make me feel good? Materialism has done that very much.
Well, that's,
yeah,
I think there's definitely some merit to that. And after this comment, I got to go. But I think there's definitely some merit to what you're saying with the dopamine rush and materialism. Women are very insular creatures. They love to receive. Their nature is a byproduct of being a receptacle. You know, the vagina is a receptacle. If you look at it in theology, in the Bible, if you espouse that worldview, the Bible told men to love their wives as Christ loved the church. So women are receivers. So I definitely think there's some credence to what you're saying. And but however, you know, men are not as masculine as your fathers or your grandfather and men of past. And men are easily manipulated by the whims of women and the machinations of pleasing her at his own expense. And so I think if a person going to be entered into a marriage where there's any level of secure sustainability, that man must know who he is as a person, have a working knowledge of female nature,
right,
and then, you know, move accordingly. But if you go into a marriage, you know, not understanding the nuances of how women think and understanding that her nature is a byproduct of being insular, then he becomes a victim of the same system that he's speaking against. So I think it takes careful self-reflection on the man, knowing the triggers where he becomes a victim of the whims of a woman when she's expecting those quote-unquote trinkets that will more or less manifest a dopamine effect. And I think once a man can more or less learn how to eradicate or ameliorate those, you know, machinations, I think, you know, the success rate becomes a lot higher. But I definitely believe that a man should be masculine in his pursuit for marriage and stand firm on his belief system. And, you know, and because I think in the end of the day, women, they actually love a man that's masculine, has a,
no question,
and has principles and stand firm in what he believes in. Because it's weird. We've been told, and let's hearken on what you're talking about, Ted, because you bring up some very salient points. Socialization has taught men to, in the more recent times, to gravitate to women, you know, kiss their behinds, you know, show them love and affection and all that. And I'm not against that, but a woman does not get that unless she's proven herself worthy of that. And, you know, it's almost like a classical behaviorism. You know, in America, we see a situation where there, you know, as a clinician, you know, there's a lot of negative reinforcement for the man, but it's positive reinforcement for a woman. But in an equilateral relationship where there's a homeostasis, or like you said, symbiotic, it's positive reinforcement for the man and the woman. But once again, we live in a very fragmented society where men have not understood the perils of manhood. They don't know how to stand on that masculine frame and demand what they want from a woman. And because of that, you know, you see the sad state of marriage. Now, I didn't get what I wanted until I started demanding. My wife knew I was very high value, good credit, you know, 6'6", 6'5", you know, two of the best schools in the country. And, you know, I said, look, this is what you're going to do. You're going to either follow my program or you can go. And when I say stuff like that, a lot of women are, like, shocked. But, you know, I said, no, they really want you to be a man, but they don't know how to go about saying it. And it will test you in the pursuit of being a man. So you got to be diligent.
Correct.
You got to have principles, and you got to have expectations, and you got to demand what you got to demand what you want in a relationship, or else you just let it go.
Well said.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things I know, small as you have to go, but one of the things you were getting at, I think you were alluding to before, was a prenuptial agreement.
Right.
You know, if this doesn't work, you take what you came with, and I'll take what I came with. And, you know, while we're in a great state of mind, if anything we acquired together, this is how that's going to be divided up. And I really think if the families are involved in that, it helps mitigate this whole notion that the woman was forced into signing a prenuptial agreement. Like, the family sat down and talked this through logically. It wasn't, and I'm not throwing love out of the relationship, but a prenuptial agreement is not about love. It really isn't. So you have a state-sanctioned license called a marriage license. That's a contract. But then you need an addendum to that contract, and that's what I think you're talking about, Smalls, is an addendum called a prenuptial agreement, and how this marriage is going to function.
Right, right. And, well, you know, so there are different schools of thought. There are schools of thought that, you know, called the Hebrew Israelites. They don't believe in, you know, they believe that men should stay away from any state-sanctioned marriages or any trappings of the legal system as it relates to America. More or less, come with a written contract that's minus either prenuptial, minus a traditional entrapment of a marriage, and come up with a written contract where that man said, look, this is what we're going to do. This is how this is going to operate. And in a way, it's a marriage, but it's really a pseudo-marriage. You know, the idea was, you know, the recent advent of marriage is something that's created by the government to more or less, you know, get funds for keeping the economy flowing. So what a lot of men in some of these cults and these sects are saying, look, keep the government out of it, no prenup, none of that. Let's come up with our own written contract, minus the government, and let's make this ship work and keep the government out of it. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I can see that. Right. It's between us.
Right, right, right. It's between us. Right. There you go. Exactly. Exactly.
Cool, man. Any thoughts, Alex? And sorry, Alex, before you jump in, I've got a few people who have been holding a while.
I got something to say, but I'll remember what it was.
Okay, area code 848, you're live and on the air with Straight Talk. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Ted, this is Dwayne from New Jersey.
Dwayne, what's going on, man? Tell me where you're calling from.
New Jersey and Sayreville.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, like what Alex was saying about arranged marriages, like one of them is China, but there's also other countries like India, Pakistan, Japan, Israel. And as far as like with the arranged marriage, they're conditioned. In this country, we're not conditioned for that, you know, because we're more independent, you know. And it does have a lower divorce rate if you do have an arranged marriage, but also they were bred it. You know, if you look at that movie, if you ever saw Coming to America, where they had the arranged marriage, the wife, the wife that was supposed to be, you know, she was bred it to be Eddie Murphy's wife, you know, so she was trained. That's what she was taught, and I think that's what a lot of the different cultures that what they do is teach their kids, you know, okay, this is going to be your wife. And then, like you said, the family, they have an arrangement, you know. And personally, I don't, you know, I'm picky. I'm, you know, of course, I'm married already. So, you know, I could have probably ended up with a lawyer, you know. And that was on a blind date. But it wasn't for me. You know, it just wasn't for me, and I end up marrying a woman. You know, she was from the island. She didn't have much, which I didn't have much, but you know what? We built that foundation, And we've been married now for over 20 years and we're happy together. Are there ups and downs? Of course. There's always going to be ups and downs. And I think the same thing with arranged marriages. And
right.
As far as like doing a prenup, and this is just my opinion, you're setting yourself up for failure. You know, like it's like almost saying, well, we're going to do a prenup just in case it doesn't work out. Well, already what you're saying is, well, you know what? I'm going to marry you, but I don't know if it's going to work. If it don't, you know what? You came in with half or whatever you came in, you leave with, you know. And I've been married once before. So, you know, when we got our divorce separated, you know what? She got mostly everything. I didn't care. You know, I wanted out of the marriage. So it didn't make a difference, you know. But the one thing I do agree where the government, you know, is going to dictate to you and tell you when you can see your kids and when when you can't, you know, like this agreement, like they're setting the rules. And I disagree with that there. You know, it's like, for instance, my son, we went to a Monday night football game. His mother was against it because it was a school night. At the time, he was only in preschool. It's like, it's important, but how important? He's in preschool. It's a Monday night. You know, I had an extra ticket, you know, I had to go to the game and I took him to the game. And, you know, I had the fight. And then she was like, well, you know, you're in violation with the court, this, and that, and the other, you know. So, you know, instead of coming to an agreement and just say, okay, I know I'm supposed to get him on a weekend. And, you know, one day during the week, which is a Wednesday, I'm supposed to have him back at 8 o'clock. But so happened the game was a Monday night. And we didn't get back until 11. I didn't bring him home. He didn't go to school. But, you know, she was ready to make a phone call, you know, to the court, say I violated, you know. So, you know, you know, that's what I wanted to say, too, you know.
Okay. But
as far as,
all
like,
right,
with
good,
the arraignment.
Good.
You know.
Alex, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I was thinking, I think Dwayne mentioned coming to America. I actually saw that for the first time maybe 2 years ago. And if I'm not mistaken, both Crazy Rich Asians and Coming to America are about two different cultures, an African culture and a Singaporean culture or whatever, a Chinese culture, adopting the Western way, which is the individualistic way, marrying for love, not marrying for economics or satisfying your family, right? So, you know, it's possible that that's a mistake to go too far in that direction. If you go too far in the satisfying my dopamine and satisfying my, when people marry for love, a lot of time it's for lust, right? If they marry within 6 months or even 3 months of meeting, it's oftentimes marrying for lust, not for long-term compatibility. So there's some confusion there. But I think what Smalls was talking about Israelites or whatever that religion is.
Hmm.
There's definitely a lot of religions,
right,
including Jehovah's Witnesses as well, that they want to stay as far away from government, you know, marriages as possible, which I think in some cases it might be good, in some cases bad. It's just definitely to be educated and aware of what that implies to have a government marriage versus a marriage that's only honored by a community but not a government contract, because a government contract can be like a lot of implications there. And the third thing I wanted to mention was there's really two things that make marriage useful. They're related, but in some cases it's useful just to be married to anybody, right? As long as I'm cohabitating and they pay the rent and I pay the rent, you know, we're both benefiting because we're saving money. We got at least some level of companionship. As long as you don't hate each other, it's good, right? So you can be married to anybody and you're better off than you're being single. And then there's the added value. If you're married to someone who you're supremely compatible with, then you're really off to the races. And, you know, you can go places you can never go if you're single, just because you're happy, you're got the stable life. You don't have the roller coaster ride you have if you're single, et cetera, et cetera. And so what we really need to do, well, I think everyone was talking about this, including Smalls. We got to get the stock value of men up, make sure that he's marriage material, and same with the woman involved. But, like I was saying earlier, marriage, people don't see marriage as imperative nowadays. They see it as sort of a luxury. It's like, if you don't get married, you're fine. You can still have kids. You can get government benefits or whatever, even if you don't marry. And so we got to, as a culture, and that includes government, unfortunately, but it does, you got to get government to be like, we got to get people married again. You know, we got to make it practical and useful. You know, you don't want to make it imperative, but we got to encourage it some way or another. And, but the more, you know, the more flexible, I guess, you know, we have more control maybe of just in our individual lives is trying to improve ourselves and make us more valuable in the dating market, the marriage market. So,
I want to take another call. Alex, I also, that video you sent me talked about the amount of men committing suicide now, which is indirectly related. Let's take another call. Let's see.
Oh yeah, it certainly relates to divorces and being
right.
You know, losing out on everything or whatever.
Right. Exactly. Let's take a call from area code 347-347. You're live and on the air with Straight Talk. What's your name and where are you calling from? I guess you just want to listen, unless you have me on mute. Okay, so we're going to keep 347 here. And so, Alex, I brought up the book about quantum success and the woman saying, you know, had a fight with her husband and the children were terrified, and, you know, everyone is being impacted from divorce. Like, divorces don't happen in some isolated funnel or vacuum. It doesn't happen in some vacuum where it doesn't affect everyone. Everyone knows someone, or whether it's a family member or a friend, everyone knows someone who has been divorced. And the more divorces you have, the more aware people become of divorce. And then as to what Dwayne was saying, if you ask for a prenuptial, there's a preconceived notion that prenuptial is a precursor to a divorce. You're setting up for failure. And, you know, we have no way of managing that. Like, divorce just equals more divorce. The more divorces you have, the more divorces you will have. So it's a cycle. Like, it's a recurring cycle, and we don't know how to stop it.
Yeah, I think what you're hitting on is, the system, there's like a feedback loop there that,
right.
I agree. I don't think it's a main driver. I think it's sort of a small part of it. It does matter. It's sort of a negative feedback loop, right? It gets worse and worse the more it happens. But I think it's a smaller part of the feedback. There's other parts of the thing that matter more. Like the fundamental, there's like the birth of a marriage and the death of a marriage. And you just really want to increase the amount of marriages and how long they last. I think divorces sometimes happen, and sometimes they're good, right? I mean, we have to admit that sometimes a divorce is a better outcome. You got into a marriage,
right?
Maybe when you're too young, it's your first marriage, and you know what? It's better for both parties, as long as it's amicable, to end it, you know, regardless if there's kids or not. But so can't deny that sometimes divorce is better. It's more about, I think marrying a little bit younger, because then you get that valuable experience that you wouldn't get otherwise. But making sure young people are educated about what's involved in the marriage and what's required to actually be a good partner, and also so you don't get financially wrecked. So that's what I would say is marry younger, have kids a little bit younger. We're having kids too old. It's not as healthy to have kids when you're 40s and 50s, you know? And
married people tend to be more responsible financially, and Dwayne was talking about how, in coming to America, you prepare and develop your children to be a spouse, to be a productive spouse in a marriage. And I think that's a huge missing. Like, you're just on your own and you're winging it, and you get married to see, like, what's going to happen. And there's no preparation. And if your parents didn't prepare you for marriage, when things start to go wrong, then you're still on your own. I mean, and if your parents are divorced, they may not be able to help you either. I'm not saying they can't, go ahead, Dwayne.
Yeah, I just want to say something. You know, for me, my experience when my first marriage, I got married, you know, fairly young in my 20s. I wasn't ready for it. So I left home to marriage. And when I did get married, a first wife, I thought once I leave the house, you know, and into marriage, I figured I was going to be at, do whatever I want. You know, I didn't realize that being married, I got a curfew. You know, it's like, oh, I was supposed to be, you know, like, the latest, if you're married, you don't want to come home like the next day, you know? And that's what I was doing. I was coming home the next day, you know? And I didn't, you know, I figured I'm not home no more. I don't have to, yeah, I'm married, but I don't have to come home right away. I can stay out as late as I want. And I think a lot of times we mistake that. And another thing was, after I got married a second time, you know, we looked at other couples and we thought they had it together. And a lot of times we make mistakes by looking at other couples and saying, wow, you know, whatever they got, I want. And then you find out that they're not even sleeping in the same bedroom. They don't even get along. It's like when they come out, it's showtime. I'm going to open the door for her. I'm going to hold her coat, her pocketbook and all of that, you know, and this is your mindset is like, wow, that's a nice couple, powerful couple. You know, I want that, but you really don't. So I think it's up to individual couples, you know, like they have to find their way. You know, you take a little bit from your parents or your grandparents or her parents, you know, and you work with it. You're not trying to be your parents or anything, but you just take something. You know, and, you know, I know for us, you know, like I tell people, I said, well, you know, they see us, they think that, oh, yeah, you guys make a good couple. Well, it wasn't always like that. It was, you know, it takes work, you know. It's not easy. Some days I can be a pain, and some days she can be a pain, you know. I know, like, during the week, you know, we both work, you know. When she comes home, she needs her space, you know, where I'm more open, you know, I'm ready to mingle and talk and everything, but I have to give her space. And then she's ready to talk or, you know, talk about her job or what happened today. And, you know, I'm always ready to talk, you know, and she'll tell you, you know, I should have been a politician. You know, it's like, oh, you talk too much, you know, so, but that's just me, you know. Yeah.
All right. So Alex, Alex sent me a video and on Facebook, and the guy was talking about the record number of suicides by men. Right. So part of that is because they go through ugly divorces. Right. They sort of get raped financially. And you have more women making more, and so as you were saying, Alex, I don't need to get married. And the guy was saying in the video, women generally don't want to marry a guy who makes less money than them. However, they still want to have children. So they'll raise the children alone, which that creates a whole nother problem of you know, young guys going through depression and not being raised with their father and, you know, no man in the house. And they're more prone to suicide and drug and alcohol addiction. And so this is creating all kinds of problems that are exacerbating. It's just making it's sort of a closed loop, Alex, what I was saying before. So divorce.
I think that's definitely a bigger driver of failed marriage is the fact that there's no marriage in the first place. So they don't learn what a marriage should look like a functioning marriage, right? So they have no example in their lives.
It's what Dwayne was getting at. It's like, so then you're not prepared for marriage, and then the marriage fails, which then creates divorce. And so it's like you have these two events happening in a closed loop that are both driving divorce.
Definitely what's been happening. And I agree. It's definitely like a black hole where you can't get out, but I think, you know, you can hit rock bottom and you'll bounce back up eventually. But I think it's better if we try to avoid hitting rock bottom and try to, you know, readjust and figure things out, you know, one way or another. One thing I would say is that every time, you know, I talk about these types of stuff, I think it's just a matter of a religious revival. And it doesn't matter what religion. People need a strong culture, usually fostered by religion, not always, but mostly fostered by some religious tradition. And that can provide for arranged marriage directly, right? The religion describes how a marriage should be and how it starts and how it goes through the whole process, right? It tells you how to act throughout it. And so that's what people need. And I think that sort of answers, you know, how you do arranged marriage is the religion tells you how to do it, whatever it might be. And I think what the U.S. needs, what America needs, is something like that, because it won't happen through government. The government is too slow moving, too complicated. And so it's returning to religion to a large extent, whatever your flavor is.
Right.
Look at that. And that, you know, I think a lot of times people nowadays are they think too much, and they don't, you know, they're like, oh, that doesn't make sense. You know, whatever religion, it doesn't make logical sense. So I'm just going to throw it all out.
Right.
And the problem
is,
you don't need to think about it. You just, it tells, you know, through tradition, we discover the right way. We might not even know why. Who cares? Why? Take on the tradition and have faith in it. Yeah.
Well, I just want to add something to that, you know, because I'm spiritual, you know, and as far as like religion goes, you know, to me, religion is a ritual. So you don't want to follow have religion involved in your life. But if you do it spiritually and say, okay, well, I'm putting God first, then my wife, you know, and you pray a hedge of protection over your wife, you know, God will make it so that, you know, you both love each other. You know, he'll make that love, you know, strong, that foundation strong. So, because religion, you know, I go to a church, Christian church, and there's more divorces in that church, in the Christian church, than, let's say, anywhere, you know, like people that don't even go to church, you know. And this is where I said, you know, we were looking at couples like, wow, they got it together. You know, we did projects with them, like called Home Builders, you know, which was, you know, we got couples that got together. We sat down, we studied. Then we went out on a, you know, you had to take your wife out. You know, both of you go out on a date. You come back next week. You talk about what you guys did, you know, and the couple that was leading the charge, you know, we looked up to them, and they were perfect. But then also we didn't realize they were looking at us like we were perfect. And one of the things I did, I called up the guy that was leading the home builders, and I told him, you know, I said, hey, it wasn't always like this. You know, we're learning a lot from you, not realizing he was learning from us, but it's just that it didn't work. We went to marriage counseling. We had a minister who counseled us. Now we're telling him all the things that's going wrong. But in the meantime, he's having issues with his wife and got divorced. And then a close friend of mine's same thing, you know? So we decided, like, wait a minute, why are these people getting divorced? You know? And I did things out there that was crazy, and, you know, we're still together, you know? So I think if you look, do it spiritually and say, okay, well, you know what, we're going to put God and make him the center. Never mind about religion, because religion, you know, I remember when my wife was pregnant and she had a miscarriage, but before the miscarriage, there was a elder couple who congratulated us on the pregnancy. And, you know, with me, I have a sense of humor. I said, you know, we heard the pastor last month. He talked about sex, so we went home and tried it. She thought that was personal, too much information. You know, religion, you got to lighten up. It's a ritual. You know, you can't say this. You can't do this.
So, Dwayne, you're saying religion wouldn't be is not a good idea to incorporate if you want to create a culture of arranged marriages. You don't think religion could do that. Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't think that's okay.
I mean, these days it's all economics, like we were talking about earlier. People want that good life. They look on Instagram, they
right.
say, I want what she's got, and they say, mm-hmm. I'm only going to get there if my man makes $200K a year. If he doesn't, then I'm going to have a mediocre life, like in the burbs, and it's
right.
going to be like life's over
right.
for me or whatever, you know. So if you have a spiritual outlook, I think you're more centered. You're not looking outside yourself for the answers. You know, you got the answers, blah, blah, blah. And,
right.
you know, that's what we're lacking to a large extent. We're too, like we were talking about earlier, dopamine driven. We're looking for the quick fix, the short term answer, not the
right.
long term stuff. And so, so I think, you know, counter to what Dwayne's saying is, I think the reason why you see a lot of divorces in church is, yeah, people do sleep around, but also economics. Like if your man can't provide anything, she's got no reason to stick around. At least that's how she sees it, right? So, you know, whether it's right or wrong, that's what's going on. And so you have to deal with that, have to accept the truth. So got to get somewhere where guys can provide something material to the marriage, or at least monetary. Anyway,
like our grandparents, you know, before my grandfather passed away, they were married over 60 plus years. She made more than him. You know, he didn't make that much. He had to work overtime just about every day, holidays, just about every holiday. And as far as I know, I never seen him take a vacation. So, but she always made more, and she, you know, she worked 9 to 5 and weekends off, and she had a better position, you know. And not only that, she was actually more educated than he was, because he left school at an early age, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing he did was he studied. He taught himself, you know. He read every newspaper there is, from front to beginning. You got the Daily News, the Star Ledger, mm-hmm. what was the other one? I think the New York Times. So, you know, and he would read the obituaries, you know, like who reads the obituary unless, you know, it's a family member, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he was he was that type of person. And
yeah, it's not there's I mean the providing money is only one, maybe like one third
yeah.
of the puzzle. So there's other stuff
right.
too, and that can't be discounted either. So there's, you know,
absolutely.
Like four or five dimensions, but you know, money helps so much
sure.
for confidence and
oh, yeah.
all that. So
yeah, it does. Yeah.
So before we close out, there's one thing that we didn't address, and you know, I talked about dopamine, and you know, you hear a lot of people say, "I had chemistry with this person," and then they get married and they say the chemistry is gone, and that's what I was getting at with dopamine. You know, this a lot of times what we call love or feelings is more of a chemical feeling, and when that's not there, if the person is not doing those things, that feeling goes away. But did you guys ever watch a reality TV show called Beauty and the Geek? Did you ever hear
I
that?
Heard of it. I heard of it. I never watched it.
Okay. So I think that was a perfect social experiment on how relationships could work in the face of not having chemistry. So the whole premise of the show was bringing together these women who were considered attractive, and some people called them hot, and you brought them together with these guys who were not. They were all geeks. You know, they had high IQs, and they went to great schools, and they had careers in technology or something geeky. And the whole reality show was having, let's say it was 10 geeks and 10 hot chicks, and they rotated and paired together, and there were certain things that they had to do and they accomplished together. They would do it as teams, right? And by the end of the show, and I don't remember how long it was amazing to see the bonds that were created between these women who generally would not have spoken to these guys, and these guys would have never approached them. You know, these are the conversations that guys would say. I would never talk to a woman like her. Now that I've had this experience, I see that she's a human being just like me, and the girls thought the same. So what I'm getting at is, a lot of times people say, well, I wouldn't want an arranged marriage, and what if there's no chemistry? But you can bring, in this case, the beauty and the geek together and have them actually acquaint themselves with one another and do things together. And that affinity, even if they didn't hook up after the show was over, they had an affinity towards one another that could have been built on top of something. And I think a lot of people overlook coming together to accomplish things as a unit, as a couple, that actually fosters the affinity that you need to make a relationship work, and all those feelings will come with it.
Yeah, I know exactly on that. I know exactly what you're getting at. I mean, I think what you're getting at, Ted, is like sometimes in life we don't have the opportunity to meet someone who would be really good for us. Because we don't have, our social circles don't mix, or whatever it might be, right? You know,
right.
So sometimes you need a little push to get there. And so obviously the TV show provided that. They kind of forced people to mingle, and like, hey,
right.
I never expected to get along with this person. So, you know, arranged marriage, or at least, you know, kind of arranged dating to get people to meet and force them to hang out. Sometimes women need that,
exactly.
Right? I mean, I think guys are love at first sight more often, but a woman, you know, maybe 10, 20 days, and then she'll warm up to somebody she never would have warmed up to otherwise, you know.
Right,
who knows?
Right. Good. Any last thoughts, gentlemen?
Yep. Well, I guess, you know, it depends on, arranged marriage is basically cultural, you know. Like, I think, who said it? I think Alex said it earlier. Culturally conditioned, you know.
Yeah, it's a cultural thing. It's a cultural institution. It won't be.
Yeah.
It won't be government. Government ordained anytime soon. I mean, I don't think that would be a good idea. But
yeah,
it's got to be cultural. Whether it's religious or not, it has to be cultural. Institution. I think religion is probably the best mechanism to make it happen, but yeah,
right.
Cultural for sure.
Yeah.
So we had a show a few weeks ago about generational wealth, and I think arranged marriages could be an excellent pathway to creating generational wealth. If your parents and your grandparents are looking for someone who's truly going to be compatible, especially if your family has accomplishments under their belt, like a business or a property, helping your son and grandson find someone who can actually help them maintain and expand whatever that legacy is that's left, and then giving them the tools along the way to ensure that marriage works, so that the couple are actually not just in service to one another, they're also in service to some accomplishment that helps keep them together. Sort of like the show The Beauty and the Geek. You know, we're working on things, we're successful, we have ups and downs, and those ups and downs really are part of the bond and the memories that we have. So I think it could work in very much the same way that you were saying online dating, Alex. You know, online dating didn't go over well in the beginning, and now it's a conversation about ease and comfort and meeting someone in the comfort of your home. Arranged marriages could completely obliterate this idea of playing games. You know, your parents, your grandparents have met someone, a family, they want you to get to know them. This, you don't have to figure out why you're coming together with someone. You're actually now focused on really getting to know one another instead of looking for this dopamine rush. Let's explore this compatibility that our parents, our family seems to believe we have. Let's explore it and get to know one another. And understanding that there's a bigger picture on the horizon. I think it could really work. And I think people have so many fears of the games and having their heart broken and all of that. I think this is one of the things, a broken heart. I'm not saying it's 100% foolproof, but I think it can get rid of a lot of games that make people shy away from dating. So I think it can work.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think you should write an article about you know, how it worked and maybe rebranding, right? Arranged marriage has so much baggage attached to it, but if you give it a new name and repackage it, it might sell.
I like that. Good suggestion.
Yeah.
I actually, when I say think about it, I'll actually think through an article.
Write a blog post and put it on the Facebook group.
Yep, I'll do that. Thanks for the suggestion. Thanks,
sure.
Dwayne, for calling. Thank you.
Yeah, right.
Alex, love having your input all the time. Thank you.
For sure.
And
for sure.
Thank you to all of our other callers who called in and were not part of this discussion. Thanks for calling. Thanks for the listeners. As always, this was a provocative conversation. It's one that people don't really like talking about, except maybe there really is a silver lining in arranged marriages that is not as dominating and forceful as people think. There, it can serve a higher cause. So thanks to the listeners, the callers. We look forward to next week with another provocative conversation. Until then, have a great evening and a great week. Take care, everyone, and goodbye.
All right, goodbye.
Evening.
Take care.
Talk later.
All right, Alex. All right,
bye.